My love is living in lands far away, by Stilton Basket. Fandom, MDZS, and the Untamed. Relationship, Lanjan / Weiying. Rating, teen and up. And the creator chooses not to use archive warnings. Additional tags for alternate universe historical, grief / mourning, ghost marriage, General Lanjan, love at first sight, Weiying loves Lanjan, introspective, mild angst, family feels, and happy ending. Summary: the Minghon of Wei Wuxian and Lanwangji in four parts. Author's notes: for Daisy Diversions. This was written for the incredible Daisy Diversions. No special occasion, just because. I hope you enjoy it. Title from the sixth part of the 19 piece of old poetry written by various authors between 1 BC and 1 AD. Culture note: Minghong, ghost marriage, was generally contracted so that a man would have descendants to worship him if he died unmarried, or if the spouse was also dead, so he could have a companion in the afterlife. This fic deals with the former case, a marriage between a living person and a ghost. Reader's notes: thank you, Stilton, for writing this for me. I'm so excited to get into it. This was just so, so sweet of you to do. So, of course, I'm podficking it. And yeah, I'm just going to do it as an ice cold read. I haven't read it beforehand. I read the summary last night when I got the notification. And then you told me to go to sleep. So that's what I did. And now I'm up and ready to record today. And so I know what I'm getting into from the tags, but I'm very excited to read this story. So let's get started. After a brief meeting of families and an equally brief betrothal, Wei Wuxian is married on a balmy morning in the autumn of his 25th year. Despite his passion for love ballads and romance novels, Wei Wuxian never expected that he might be married one day. As the common-born ward of a merchant, he lacked the standing to find a wife among the gentry. And though he had liked the idea of a love match, where neither his rank nor that of his wife's would matter very much, as long as Wei Wuxian could provide a comfortable home for them, no would-be beloved had ever materialized. What was more, he took in a young child of his own when he was 23. And after it became clear that small Aoyuan would never be displaced by a son of Wei Wuxian's blood, either in affection or matters of inheritance, for such a son would not have the rights of inheritance due to Yuaners as the first child, no matter what else Wei Wuxian might be able to provide for him. The rare invitations he received from mothers arranging matchmakers' meetings petered out completely. It was thus that he came to be unwed at the age of 24, when one of his uncle's old friends from court wrote to Lotus Pier to ask if Jiang Fengmin would be in favor of a Ru Wei marriage with Wei Wuxian as the bridegroom. At first, the proposal had not seemed unusual, for it was common for educated men without noble-born parents to marry into their wives' families rather than the other way around. But as soon as Uncle Jiang read the letter, he shut himself up in his study for a full Shichen before emerging to speak with Wei Wuxian. "There's something wrong with the proposal, isn't there?" Wei Wuxian asked when he and Zheng Cheng were admitted into the study. "Or perhaps something the matter with the bride? I don't really need to marry anyone, Uncle, but I wouldn't mind if the bride were..."
"There is no bride,"
Zheng Fengmin said in a flat voice.
"One of Lan Qiren's nephews died not too long ago, and he wants you to take the nephew as a Gui Xinlong."
Zheng Cheng cried out in outrage, but Wei Wuxian only furrowed his brow and tried to remember if Zheng Fengmin had so much as mentioned the name Lan Qiren in his presence before that afternoon. He hardly knew the names of any of his uncle's former associates in the Ministry of Works, for Zheng Fengmin left his post long before Wei Wuxian was brought to live at Lotus Pier. He departed in the year Wei Wuxian's foster sister Yan Li was born, for Yan Li Jie's health was delicate from the first, and Zheng Fengmin so feared losing his daughter that he refused to leave her side until her physicians could give him some assurance that she might live to grow up. And though a handful of his juniors from the ministry came to visit now and then while Ajie was young, Wei Wuxian was sure that none of the officials that were introduced to him bore the name Lan. Presently, the look in Zheng Fengmin's eyes softened somewhat.
"Do you remember," he asked, "when you and Ah Cheng were 6 years old, and one of my Shidi men came to Lotus Pier with two small boys?"
Zheng Cheng frowned.
"The one you studied with in the capital when you were young?"
"Yes, that one. His brother and Cao Zi died nearly 20 years ago, and Long Zheng was obligated to travel south not long after their funeral. And since his nephews could not bear to part from him, Lan Qiren brought them along. They stayed with us for a week, and I sent you and Ajahn out to play with the boys. I remember that the older one fell into the lake while the two of you were playing on the docks with Ali and Ajahn."
Wei Wuxian shut his eyes, for a memory had come back to him, an impression of being very small and determined, trudging through the woods on the east shore of Lake Lianghua, as he searched the brush for rabbits, he murmured. "The little boy, Ajahn, he was crying for his mother, so I went into the woods to look for rabbits for him." He thought for a moment longer, and in bits and pieces, half-faded glimpses of that summer's day flickering across his mind's eye. He had dragged the grieving Ajahn out to sit in the sunny grass near his favorite swimming hole, where the river Huangbai flowed into Lake Lianghua. And when Ajahn began to cry, Wei Wuxian left him in the care of Zheng Cheng's nurse and wandered off to find something to cheer him up. He ran through Liefeng's open-air market for what felt like hours, but none of the trinkets and sweets he would have liked seemed remotely suited for Ajahn. And at length,
Wei Wuxian thought of the embroidered rabbits sewn into the hems of Ajahn's sleeves and made up his mind to find his new friend a live rabbit who would go back to the capital with him. Wei Wuxian swallowed.
Is Lan Zhan the one who...
Zheng Fengmin inclined his head. It is a great pity. I heard that some great general or other was felled at the border last month, but I never imagined. He passed Lan Xiren's letter to Wei Wuxian, who grasped it with trembling hands before unfolding it.
A Minghong is the only way for Wang Ji to ever have descendants to worship him,
Lan Qiren had written, after a brief explanation of Lan Zhan's death in battle, and the question of how he has to be cared for in the afterlife as an unmarried man.
I cannot ask a maiden to live as a widow without having ever been wed, much less for the sake of a man she did not know. But, more importantly, Si Chen is convinced that Wang Ji was a cut sleeve and would never have bound himself to a woman of his own accord. I remembered that you have a young son with a child of his own, whose prospects in marriage have not been favorable since he took the boy into his care. If Wei Wuxian were to accept Wang Ji as a ghost bridegroom and raise his son as a Lan, he and the child would be granted full rights as members of the inner Lan family, and the child would be recognized as Wang Ji's son and the sole heir to his estate, regardless of whether Wei Wuxian chooses to marry again afterwards. In fact, I will be so bold as to say that a Minghong might improve Wei Wuxian's chances in time, for with his first child's inheritance settled, his future bride need not fear for the prospects of her own children. As for Wei Wuxian himself, if the Minghong is completed, he will be given the deed to the courtyard where Wang Ji used to live, to be handed over to the child in the event that he leaves the cloud recesses to remarry. Upon remarriage, he will be permitted to take half of whatever remains from Wang Ji's inheritance, and though we would not dare to interfere with the rearing of his son, we ask only that the child continue to honor Wang Ji as his father, alongside Wei Wuxian and his stepmother when he is grown.
What a pity that Long Zhengjun passed away so early,
Zheng Cheng muttered, peering over Wei Wuxian's shoulder.
But even so, a Minghong.
For some reason, Wei Wuxian found himself blinking back tears. He could not quite recall the young Ajahn's face. For the 18 years that elapsed since their parting had erased nearly everything about him from Wei Wuxian's mind. But he remembered how the little Lan Zhan had wept for his late mother, and how tenderly he cradled the two young rabbits Wei Wuxian gifted to him. That child was dead and buried now. Or perhaps only dead? For the letter gave no indication that his body had ever been recovered from the battlefield where he fell. And Wei Wuxian was still alive, standing less than a third of a li from the spot where Lan Wangji clung to him and cried as if his heart would break from missing his Anyang.
Should Father and I write back and tell him you won't do it, Ge?
Weiwuxian shook his head and slipped the letter into his sleeve. No, he said, in a voice that was half a sob. No, don't. Tell Lung Xiangsheng that I accept.
It was thus that Weiwuxian became a Nung Qi to the deceased Lan Wangji in the month before his 25th birthday. There was no lack of pomp or richness in the wedding etiquettes, though they were carried out in the utmost secrecy. An astrologer looked at their two Bazi and announced with some astonishment they had never seen a bride and groom so clearly fated for one another. And then Weiwuxian made his wedding vows in the Jiang ancestral shrine, where a pair of memorial tablets had been set up for his parents. And after that, the very next day, though it had seemed like an eternity, he left Lotus Pier and set off for his new home in the capital with Aoyuan and his new in-laws. He was to live there during autumn and winter and return to Lotus Pier in the spring. And during their time at Cloud Recesses, Aoyuan would receive the same schooling due to the children of the Lan clan. For Aoyuan was Lan Yuan now, and a wealthy little master in his own right. To Weiwuxian's astonishment, Lan Xiren and Lan Xichen both seemed to love him at first sight. And stranger still, Lan Xichen remarked in some surprise that Aoyuan seemed to resemble the deceased Lan Wangji about his nose and forehead. He looks as if he could have been Wangji's child in truth, he said softly, as Aoyuan clambered into Lan Xiren's lap with his favorite storybook in one hand and a mooncake clutched in the other. Have you given him a courtesy name yet, Difu? Weiwuxian opened his mouth to reply, but before he could tell Lan Xichen that he had decided to put the matter of Aoyuan's courtesy name off until he was older, one appeared, fully formed in the forefront of his thoughts. Lan Sizhui, he replied, stroking the little boy's hair. He'll be Lan Sizhui in remembrance of his Fuqin. After Weiwuxian came to live at the Cloud Recesses, the days slipped by like a whirlwind. Autumn gave way to winter, almost before he realized that the nights had begun to lengthen. And by the turn of the new year, he grew used to living as the widower of a man he had never known. He visited Lan Zhan's tablet in the Lan ancestral hall nearly every morning. Aoyuan accompanied him from time to time before toddling off to study at the Cloud Recesses infant school in the afternoon. And while Yuan Er was away from the Longdong Yuan, the courtyard where Lan Wangji had lived before he joined the army, and which Lan Xichen signed over to Weiwuxian as soon as the Mianhong was finalized. Weiwuxian shut himself up in his husband's old study with the blueprints for the new well pumps he was designing. When his back began to ache from stooping over his desk, he usually went out to walk in the Longdong Yuan's little garden. It was oddly wild-looking for a garden belonging to the Cloud Recesses, full of gentians and medicinal herbs, tangled as they pleased the grass.
And if not for the loose magnolia standing near the door to Lan Wangji's bedroom, Wei Wuxian would have doubted that the Lan family had had the slightest hand in designing it.
"This courtyard was our mother's," Lan Xichen tells him on a chilly afternoon in the middle of Zhao Yue. "She was from a family of wandering healers, and she wanted to grow herbs here after she and Fuchin were married. So he dug up all the things in the flower beds and planted gentians and dong
chu'ai for her. They kept the magnolia tree since this has been here before Cloud Recesses was built. And when Wang Ji was little, Mu Qin used to set him under the magnolia and shake the branches so their petals would fall into his crib." Wei Wuxian's throat grows tight. He would have liked to ask his brother-in-law more about his and Ajahn's childhood, but before he could speak, he spots two pieces of lichen, spotted stone, poking up through the snow at the base of the tree. "What are those?" he asks, squinting against the sun. "Is something else planted there?" Lan Xichen turns to follow his pointed finger before freezing in his tracks. "Ah," he says softly, "no. Wang Ji's pet rabbits are buried there. They lived until, when was it? The last dog year, I think. He took such great care of them that Shufu used to say they were like his children." And then, as Wei Wuxian tried to dab at his eyes without being noticed, "He named them Bi Chen and Chen Qing. What solemn names for rabbits," Lan Xichen says, making a valiant effort to laugh as he stares at the two little gravestones. "He named his sword after Bi Chen later. That was a little more fitting, thank heavens." They sit together in silence for a little while longer, watching the snow pile higher on the rabbits' tiny graves. Wei Wuxian cannot bring himself to speak, and Lan Xichen seems to have no need to do so. But at length, Wei Wuxian turns to his brother-in-law and asks the question that has been lingering in his mind since the day he took his wedding vows. "Xichen Ge," he ventures, "how did you know? How did you know that Lan Zhan would have wanted a man to wed in his Minghong and not a woman? Did he ever tell you?" "That..." Lan Xichen's voice trails off. "I found out by accident, really. I do not think Wang Ji ever meant to let me know, but when it came to the matters of his Minghong, Shufu began by looking for families whose daughters had died unmarried after they were old enough to wed, so I asked him to seek a bridegroom instead."
"But how did you know to ask for a bridegroom at all?"
"Wang Ji said it himself when he was drunk," Lan Xichen confessed, smiling sadly. "You must have wondered why the Lan forbid the consumption of alcohol within the Cloud Recesses, since even priests do not hold themselves to such standards. But the truth is that even a sip of wine is enough to send most of us out of our wits. Wang Ji tasted alcohol only once in his life. He mistook a cup of mead served at the Bu Jingsha for peach juice, and drank it all before I could take it from him, and he had to be chased down and put to bed afterwards." He looked so grave, even as he was trying to climb out the nearest window, so I decided to tease him a little. I asked if he had ever liked anyone, and for a time he did not reply, but at last he told me that he had made up his mind to live as a bachelor forever, for he had a beloved whom he could not wed. I asked him who the woman was, but Wangji only shook his head and told me that the one he loved was a man. His family would never permit our union, he said, and he's so dear to me that I cannot bear to burden him with my feelings, for he is such a soft-hearted soul that he would grieve for the fact that he could not return them. I would not cost him any pain if it were in my power, and especially not in that way.
Wei Wuxian's lips trembled. Did you ever find out who it was?
No, never. Wangji recalled nothing of our conversation the next morning, and since he would never have breathed a word on the subject if he were sober, I did not ask him. At this, Lan Xichan lays a hand on Wei Wuxian's shoulder in farewell before turning towards the gate.
Wei Wuxian remains in the garden for a little while longer, reluctant to leave his husband's beloved rabbits to continue their long slumber alone. Some part of him thinks he might comfort Lan Zhan's spirit to keep vigil here, for the garden in the Long Dong Yuan seems to hold more of him than the rest of the compound put together. And when the bell outside the Lanxia strikes the hour, Senxia, meaning that Yoner will be finished with his lessons in the next 2K, he crouches in front of Bi Chen's grave and brushes away the snow surrounding it with a fallen twig from the magnolia tree. Before the twin grave markers, he finds two well-worn indentations that could have only come from a pair of knees pressed into the damp earth. Day after day, and season after season, since the rabbits passed away. Wei Wuxian presses his hands to his face and bites his tongue to keep from crying.
Lan Wangji, Lan Wangji, he chokes. Who asked you to be so good?
He comes to know more about his husband in the weeks that follow, despite the fact that Lan Laoshi and Lan Xichen do not often speak of him. From the old diaries in the Jingxia study, he learns that Lan Zhan had a wry sense of humor that he kept entirely to himself, and when he opens the neat account books lined up on the shelves above his husband's desk, he realizes that his husband used to write music. It was no surprise when he played, of course. Lan Zhan was a master of the six arts in life, though Lan Qiren still laments his ineptitude at painting. But while any young master his age might be expected to know how to play the qin, talent in composition was not nearly so common.
I saw him giving out bouquets to celebrate Don Wu Jie today, Lan Zhan wrote above a score he had tucked between the pages of the last account book his mother kept before her death. He was throwing peonies to the girls in the street until they were ringed about him like a bed of green leaves about a lotus flower. I was bold enough to steal a peony that one of the maidens crushed underfoot. It was not too badly hurt. It had nearly all its petals, and it will be no different from an intact flower once dry. So, I have resolved to press it in one of Mu Qin's old books and keep it there as a remembrance of him. Heart in his throat, Wei Wuxian drops the account book and turns to the shelf devoted to Madame Lan's books of poetry. She left Lan Zhan a book full of them when she died, some in better condition than others, and when Wei Wuxian picks up the most battered one of the lot, he finds a dried peony tucked between the cover and the flyleaf. He closes the book almost immediately, afraid of damaging the flower, and from that moment on, he is conscious that some part of his heart has broken away from him and passed into the keeping of a ghost. It is almost as if Wei Wuxian were in mourning, mourning that a life as dear as Lan Wangji's had been extinguished, far from home, without a single loved one close at hand to comfort him in his final hours. His grief is made no easier by the fact that Lan Wangji hardly seemed to have left Cloud Recesses, for the Jingsha and the Lan Dan Yuan are full of him. So Wei Wuxian can find some reminder of him everywhere he turns. And as the day draws on, he finds himself wishing that he and the grown Lan Zhan had met just once before the latter rode to war. "I feel as if I knew him," he thinks idly, upon discovering a notebook in which Lan Wangji had attempted and failed, much to Wei Wuxian's amusement, to design a scabbard for his sword, Bi Chen. "And so I feel as if I lost him too." The sense of loss only seems to grow deeper with time, and much to his brother-in-law's distress, Wei Wuxian begins binding his hair with white cord by the day of the Shengyuan Jie, when the Zhonghe festival arrives. Wei Wuxian attends it in full mourning, and every evening after Aoyuan is in bed, Wei Wuxian makes his way to the ancestral hall and sits before Lan Zhan's memorial tablet for half the night before creeping back to the Longjiang Yuan in Yinsha. "You look poorly, Ajian," Lan Xichen says anxiously, on the day Lan Zhan's magnolia comes into flower. "Have you been eating? I know you're not used to the food we serve at the Lan Fu, but I cook meat in the Lan Dan Yuan's kitchen myself when I have time," Wei Wuxian tells him. "I'm all right, Xichenka, really."
"You do not look all right," Lan Xiran grumbles, eyeing Wei Wuxian's shrunken shoulders with dissatisfaction. "Perhaps you should go home to Lotus Pier this month, instead of waiting until Mie Yu. If your health grows any worse than this by the time you see your uncle again, Zhang Sheng will have my head."
Wei Wuxian should have leapt at the chance to return home, for he knows full well that these last 4 months at the Cloud Recesses have altered him for the worse. But, strangely, he finds himself reluctant to depart. He is not reluctant to leave the Cloud Recesses at all, for he dearly misses his family in Yunmeng, but for some reason he cannot bear the thought of leaving early. The date of his departure was settled when he left Lotus Pier, the 12th day of the plum moon, exactly 6 months before his 26th birthday. The longer Wei Wuxian thinks on the matter, the more certain he is that he expects something to happen before he leaves his wedded home for the summer. And as for what that something might be... What's the matter? Wei Wuxian cries a fortnight later, when he rushes into the Longsha to find Lan Qiran on the verge of swooning in Lan Xichen's arms. You were told me you collapsed during his morning lesson. Are you all right, uncle? Lan Qiran raised his white face from Lan Xichen's shoulder.
Wang Ji is alive,
he croaks with great difficulty.
He sent a runner ahead. There was an assassin charged with slaying him at the front, and the body his battalion sent back was not.
Wei Wuxian nearly faints away where he stands. The cloud recesses descends into chaos within the next ke, for Long Wangji is due to arrive at the estate in less than a sichen. And when the gong outside the Lansha strikes for the eighth time, marking the Weisha, one of Lan Xichen's uncles draws Wei Wuxian away from his brother-in-law's side and leads him back to the Longdong Yuan with A Yuan.
You must stay here for now, Wei Gongza, he says gently. Let Qiren and Ahuan welcome him home and inform him of the Minghe, and then... He does not remain to say what might happen then, but Wei Wuxian waits on the Jingxia front porch as bidden, holding A Yuan to keep him from running away. And after what seems like an age, he hears an exclamation from one of the outer courtyards, followed by the sound of hurrying feet approaching the Longdong Yuan.
Wang Ji, Lan Xichen calls from somewhere close by. Wang Ji, for heaven's sake, slow down. But the footsteps in the corridor leading to Wei Wuxian's gate do not slow their pace. And then the gates open, admitting a tall, gaunt figure clad in a loose coat of armor. Lan Wangji's gaze alights on Wei Wuxian as soon as he closes the threshold of the Longdong Yuan. He takes one step forward, and then another, and then he staggers through the garden to the steps beneath the Jingxia's front door and meets Wei Wuxian's eyes for the first time.
They told me that I was married in my absence, he says hoarsely, looking up at Wei Wuxian in mingled shock and disbelief. And that Sheng Sheng said I had a child. Despite himself, Wei Wuxian bursts into laughter.
You do. This is Lan Yuan, he says, holding Lan Yuan up for Lan Wangji to see. Your son.
Hello.
A Yuan whispers, favoring Lan Zhan with a tiny smile before hiding his face in Wei Wuxian's neck. Lan Wangji draws a harsh breath and stretches out his hand.
And you... he entreats,
so softly that Wei Wuxian has to lean forward to hear him.
My husband, what of you?
Wei Wuxian meant to introduce himself by his courtesy name, for what other name should he have given when he has been of age these past 5 years? But at the last moment, he bites his lip and says...
This husband is the one who gave you your rabbits,
he smiles, trying with all his might not to weep as Lan Wangji's eyes grow wide in wonder.
And you knew me once as Wei Ying.
Thank you.
writer's notes. No make this time. I finished writing this just a few hours before posting, and I'm still in a very bittersweet mood. But come say hi on Tumblr at Stilton Basket and comment to feed your local Wangxian stan today. Reader's notes. Thank you, Stilton. This was so beautiful. And I think, you know, as you described it, bittersweet is a really lovely way of putting it. I will admit that the ending of Lanzhan being alive did actually surprise me, even though I know it's tagged for happy ending. I was thinking like, oh, they'll, you know, join each other in the afterlife, or maybe Lanzhan will find a way to start speaking to Wei Ying, or maybe Wei Ying learns the Qin and then he could talk to him through inquiry or something like that. But yeah, being united in the flesh is it's really beautiful. You know, and I really love this story of, you know, Wei Ying learning who Lanzhan is through what he's left behind, right? And, you know, his legacy in some way, right, is his kindness and his depth of feeling and all of that, and Wei Ying living in his space in the role of his spouse, and getting to learn him that way backwards is really, really lovely. And I love this, you know, kind of these allusions to things that we know, that Lanzhan was, you know, in love with Wei Ying the whole time, right? And continued to follow him and was trying to spare him from, you know, his any sort of pain, and you know, Lan Xichen, you know, fought for Lan Wangji in death for, you know, what he thought his last wishes might be. And at the same time, you know, I think that sometimes, you know, these marriage of convenience type fix can, you know, play into existing class structures, right? In a way where, you know, one party is favored over the other, right? Like the way that a lot of these negotiations work. But I really liked the care that the Longs put into this to make it so that, hey, like everyone will know what they're getting out of this, and it's beneficial for us, but it's also beneficial for you. And no one is trying to kind of, you know, get something over the others. They're just trying to, you know, make sure that there's somebody there for Lanzhan, you know, through the rest of time, right? That you're kind of securing that that legacy, I think that's it's really heartbreaking, right? But they did that to help Lanzhan, and then Lanzhan comes back and it's everything he ever wanted, right? You know, it's getting to be married to Wei Ying and have both of their families, you know, be okay with it, and having a third child, right? You know, his rabbits and then Ayuan, to be able to yeah, just care for and to be in his life now. And I feel like there's probably part of Lanzhan that you know is getting everything he always wanted, and probably feels very overwhelmed by this moment. And So is Wei Ying, right? Like, this is the person that he really wished that he could have had that opportunity to know. And, you know, something told him, like, you know, there's something coming for you here. And this is where you're meant to be. And that's lovely. Really lovely. There were so many touches where I thought Lanzhan was, like, watching, right? Like, when
Wei Ying was saying Shizui's name, and it's like, no, it's, you know, that was just, as the astrologer said, right? Like, they're just fated to be, and, this was the way that they could get together in this world, and, yeah, I think that this is so, so special, and yeah, I love the world building of this, and, everything that kind of went into it, and just, yeah, everyone's kind of intentions and, feelings, and, yeah, just so, so lovely. But yeah, I'm gonna stop because I don't know that I have, much else to say that will actually add to the conversation. It'll just me continue to yap. And my voice is still, recovering a little bit from, Voice Team, which wrapped up, last weekend. And, also, we're getting some blowback from the wildfires that are happening in Canada right now. And so my throat is a little sore from all of that type of thing. So, you know, in terms of like the air quality and my home just yapping nonstop for the last month. But yeah, so I'm going to wrap it up here. And just thank you again, Stilton Basket, for writing this and for gifting it for me. And I really, really enjoyed this fic, and I think that it was really special and beautiful. So thank you again for that. Thank you for having blanket permission to podfic, as always. And for everyone else, thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this story, please consider going back and leaving kudos and or comments to the original author on AO3. All right, thanks for listening. Bye. Oh.